So Lev was born in Moscow, where he spent a longer part of his life, and he has already in Moscow been working in the field between fine arts, architecture, and computer science, so already in this not-so-multimedia hype environment, he somehow managed to link these fields of interest that he is pursuing since. And he received an MA in cognitive science, and when he after he moved to New York, and is currently teaching in. He did his PhD on engineering of vision from constructivism to computers. So you see this interest in Russian avant-garde constructivism is carried now into the world of digital media, and so he is. Continuing to keep these links also in his major studies, the language of new media, where he draws lines back, for example, to film montage as the paradigm of one of the possible paradigms of the way multimedia is constructed, especially the Russian avant-garde montage of Einstein and Vertov plays an important role here. So Lev also has a not so well-known, maybe artistic part in his life. And I was astonished in reading that already in 1984, still in Moscow, you did computer animations. You still have to tell me how. In New York, 1984, but you still have been there. Okay, I mixed that up. Yeah. Ah, yeah, 81 you went. Okay, right now, yeah, okay. And most people here around will know his writing, so I will not go very much into the details of his most popular books. And I find some of these titles you always give to your work very evocative. My favorite one is Metadata Mon Amour, or Metadating the Image. And maybe this can reconcile me with some of the long, ongoing, and very frustrating meta discussions we have in our institute. I just have to see it more in a kind of direct, emotional, erotic way that I have dates with data, which still seem to be sometimes very austere to me. And okay, we are all looking forward to your presentation, Lev. And,
yeah, okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, well, I'm deeply honored and very embarrassed to follow you know Ted Nelson. I think Dieter Daniel already spoke about my embarrassment, but nevertheless, let me try to do something. And I feel like some kind of monk in a 9th century monastery, you know, maybe copying the Bible and introducing some kind of misunderstanding comments on the margins. But we'll see. Ted's presentation made it clear the contemporary computer media has been invented by people who were not techies, who were not computer scientists, who were intellectuals and artists, right? Ted and Engelbart, Simon Peppert, Negroponte, Alan Kay. Ted, right? I mean, you can ask him himself, but you know, was an avant-garde poet, right? If I understand it correctly, who was looking for new media to represent connections of ideas in a way that previous media couldn't do. So he went on and basically did what real artists can do, and it doesn't happen very often. He invented the brand new media, which, as we know, maybe it was misunderstood, or you know, even if it was implemented later in a kind of dumbed down version, right, becoming World Wide Web, and it has redefined human culture. So to that extent, of course, the net artists, I'm talking about the classical period of net art since, let's say, 95 to 98, have already been, you know, working with already established media, right? So they've been already doing their work on top of the established, let's say, academic and commercial media World Wide Web. So perhaps, you know, it is people like Alan Kay and Ted Nelson and Engelbart, who are the real artists of 20th century. But nevertheless, it's not so bad, right? It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not necessarily a weak position if you're working with already established commercial media, such as your GPS or World Wide Web or interactive computing, because in 20th century, you know, we have very good examples of people doing it very successfully, right? So, for example, in the 60s, artists who work with photography started to go to the origins of photography, and we started to work with pinhole cameras and make their own cameras. But, of course, throughout 150 years of photography, artists have also done pretty amazing work with, you know, kind of consumer cameras, right? The same thing with filmmaking, right? You know, when you think about medium of film, again, the 60s and 70s, lots of filmmakers started to cut film and colorize film and basically really try to kind of reinvent or interfere, right, go inside the medium of film, the way it was established industrially. And yet, you know, lots of our filmmakers throughout the 20th century did pretty amazing cultural projects using the established media of film. So I think the fact that the so-called net artists, you know, have been working on top of, you know, basically a medium which was not designed for them or by them, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Now, I don't want to reduce net art to a single idea, but I think one of the driving ideas behind net art was a common idea in a 20th century kind of modernist culture, which is the artists wanted to question an existing media, kind of take it apart, figure out its elements, and talk about its specificity. So this happened with painting and in 1910s, with film in 1920s, with fashion, let's say, with the arrival of kind of deconstructive, you know, fashion, asymmetrical fashion, 1980s and 1990s. And with the net, the artists started to do it around 95, 96. And of course, for them, you know, they thought that at that time that the most important thing about the new medium of the network or World Wide Web was the connectivity. So you have works such as, and I'm not going to show them because I'm probably other people will show them later, such as Heath Bunting, where, you know, there's a piece of text on a web page and every single word is linked to another web page on the internet, or such masterpieces as My Boyfriend Came Back from a War by Olga Lyalina, where she basically uses very, you know, expressively what was then a new feature, World Wide Web, which is the ability to organize information in frames. Right. Well, the problem, of course, is that when painters, you know, basically went to deconstruct the language of painting, you know, beginning, let's say, with Seurat, you know, and you know, Manet in 1960s, and ending up with, you know, Kandinsky, Mondrian, Kupka in 1910s, you know, it was a pretty stable medium, right? The same thing with film and other artistic media of 20th century. Right, the difficulty encountered by net artists, and of course the difficulty encountered by all of us, right, who come to Arts Electronica and you know, look at work and try to, you know, try to do works here, is that, you know, it's like basically trying to deconstruct or trying to figure out, you know, the car while you're driving it at 160, right, miles per hour, right? So the thing about computer media is that it's constantly changing. It's industrial media also, but as I will try to explain in my talk, it's also fundamentally different from previous industrial media, because by its nature, by its very nature, it's constantly expendable, it's constantly edible, it's never stable. So how do you kind of talk about the essences, right, the essential properties of computer media, such as the network, when this network is constantly, you know, being updated? In fact, if you think about websites of a popular, you know, Web 2.0 companies, you know, be it Flickr or Google, who really understand this nature of computer media, you know, if you go to Google website, they basically change their code, you know, they change the, you know, the search engine code three times, you know, a few times a day, right? So you don't have anything like a stable media, you know, like a printed book, which has been around for a few hundred years, or even film, which was changing, but not as fast, right? So that's what I want to address, right? So what is it about the nature of kind of computer media, which is sort of different from previous ones? What does it mean to work? What does it mean to work with computer media when it's constantly changing? What is, you know, how can we change it? What are the logics of these changes, right? So it can be, in fact, is it possible, is it meaningful to talk about computer media, right? So what happens to the whole concept of media or medium after its computerization, Okay, and I'm going to I'm going to apologize to Ted. I'm going to present somewhat different version of history, and he'll probably get very irritated with me. On one hand, as perhaps Ted would recognize, one of the good things about computer media and hypertext or hypermedia is that it allows multiple points of view and multiple connections. So perhaps Ted will forgive me, but I will maybe present somewhat different history and focusing on a somewhat different figure, because I simply don't dare to talk about his brilliant and groundbreaking work in his presence. So my hero is going to be somebody else, which is Alan Kay, whom Ted called a techie, but I personally have somewhat different perspective on Alan Kay, who I think was one of the more artistic people in this generation, along with Ted, who had deep interest in music and art and education. And that's, I think, what allowed him to make some also very important contribution to the development of computer as a cultural machine. Okay. And specifically, I'll be kind of pointing towards this article published by him and his close collaborator, Xerox PARC, Adair Goldberg, Personal Dynamic Media, which was published in 1977, where we talk about the work we've been doing at Xerox PARC. And Alan had this idea for a kind of laptop of the future, which he called DynaBook. But we couldn't really build it, so instead we built more of a what we in the 80s called workstation. But he's going to talk about this workstation as a kind of interim DynaBook, so that's why you're going to see references to DynaBook in the article. Okay, so what did Alan Kay and his team in Xerox PARC, working between, let's say, 1970 and 1975, wanted to do? Well, the brief answer is that Kay wanted to turn computers into personal dynamic media, which can be used for learning, discovery, and artistic creation. Right? His group went around to achieve this by systematically simulating most existing media within a computer while simultaneously adding many new properties to this media. Kay and his collaborators also developed a new type of programming language that, at least in theory, would allow users to quickly invent new types of media using the set of general tools already provided by them. All these tools and simulations of already existing media were given a unified user interface designed to activate, according to Kay, multiple mentalities, right? Multiple cognitive abilities, multiple ways of learning, including kinesthetic, viconic, and symbolic, right? So, so what I want to kind of talk about is that what does it mean to basically simulate, right? Existing physical media in the computer, which was one of the kind of achievements of a group at Xerox PARC, and of course, which was an important contribution to like the shape of computer media the way it exists today. Right? If you look at this article, you'll see that there are early examples of like some of the earliest paint system and drawing program and the music composition program throughout this paper. So this is Alan Kay's kind of design for, DynaBook circa 1970, right? Still looks more elegant than even my MacBook Pro, but that's how the thing actually looked. And it's true that we gave people fonts, and which Alan thought was a good thing. And but this is one of the earliest paint program and drawing program and so on. Right? So what does it mean? What does it mean to simulate existing media in the computer? Is this a good thing? Now, Alan Turing theoretically defined a computer, right, in the late 1930s as a machine that can simulate a very large class of our machines. And of course, it is the simulation ability that is largely responsible for the proliferation of computers in modern society, because computers are simply simulating a very large class of our machines and devices. However, I think, and again, maybe Ted can tell us a different story, but reading the original documents of people from his generation, as far as I can see, neither Kay, neither Turing, nor our theorist inventors of digital computers, people in the 30s and 40s, explicitly considered that the simulation could also include media. So I think it was the generation of Alan, Sutherland, Engelbart, and Kay, and their collaborators, that extended the idea of simulation to media, thus turning the universal Turing machine into what we can call universal media machine. In fact, in the same article, Alan and Adair Goldberg write, in a very real sense, simulation is the central notion of DynaBook. So what does it mean to simulate media in a computer? When we use computers to simulate some process in the real world, the behavior of a weather system, the processing of information in the brain, the deformation of a car in a crash, our concern is to correctly model the necessary features of this process and system. We want to be able to test how our model would behave in different conditions with different data. And the last thing we want to do is to introduce some new property into the model that we ourselves did not specify. In short, when we use computers as a general purpose medium for simulation, we want this medium to be completely transparent. But what happens when we simulate different media in a computer? Well, in this case, you know, if we're educated, intellectual, artistic people, as this generation was, I mean, Ted shows us some of his artistic, you know, artistic examples, so these people were definitely not technicians. We were intellectuals and artists, right? So, you know, we were not afraid to invent new media, right? So when we simulate different media in a computer, the appearance of new properties may be welcome, as we can extend the expressive and communicative potential of this media. Appropriately, when Alan Kay and his colleagues created computer simulations of existing physical media, i.e. tools for representing, creating, editing, and viewing this media, right? So basically to simulate a media in a computer, I think means that you created tools for representing, offering, editing, and viewing this media. They added many new properties, right? So we didn't simply mechanically simulate it, we kind of turned this media into new media. For instance, in the case of a book, as Kay and Goldberg point out, the electronic book need not be treated as a simulated paper book, since this is also a new medium with new properties. A dynamic search may be made for a particular context. The non-sequential nature of a file medium and the use of a dynamic manipulation allows a story to have many accessible points of view. Kay and his colleagues also added various other properties to the computer simulation of paper documents. As Kay has referred to this in another article, his idea was not simply to simulate paper, but rather to create magical paper. Okay. So here he's talking about this. Okay. For instance, the Park team gave users the ability to modify the fonts in a document and create new fonts. We have also implemented another important idea that was already developed by Douglas Engelbart, right, another pioneer of computer media in the 60s, the ability to create different views of the same structure. And both Engelbart and Ted Nelson, of course, Ted, you know, was early, and I think Ted's notion of hypermedia was much more general. I think for Engelbart it was something more specific, but we can discuss this. But basically, you know, I think both had this idea, the ability to connect different documents or different parts of the same documents through hyperlinking, where I think Engelbart used this as a kind of for documentation system, right? Not necessarily as artistic medium. So Engelbart group also developed the ability for multiple users to collaborate in the same document, and the list goes on and on. Email in 1965, news groups in 1979, the World Wide Web in 1991, and so on. Each of these new properties, each of these new additions, had far-reaching consequences, right? So I think what happens in the history of media, when these very smart people set out to simulate existing media, they added these new properties, and what at first looked like simple additions, in fact, they kind of came to the foreground, and as a result, all these existing simulations of existing media actually became completely different media with new properties. Think, for example, with search. Although the ability to search through a page-long text document doesn't sound like a very radical innovation, as the document gets longer, this ability becomes more and more important. It becomes absolutely crucial if we have a very large collection of documents, such as World Wide Web and all the billions of documents there. Although current search engines are far from being perfect and perhaps will be replaced by some more smarter technology in the future, imagine how different, you know, but that's what we have today. Imagine how different the culture of web would be without them. So I think studying the writings and public presentations of people who invented interactive media computing, Nelson, Sutherland, Engelbart, Kay, makes it clear But we didn't come with new properties of computational media as an afterthought. On the contrary, we knew right away that we're turning physical media into new media. So, for example, if you look at the you know, very kind of well-known lecture and demo by Douglas Engelbart, which he presented in 1968 before we joined Computer Conference, where he showed the work of his group and his system designed in the mid-60s, one of the things he shows is something he called view control. Right? Well, how many of you heard about view control? I mean, you heard about, okay, right? People heard about, you know, Web 2.0 and RSS feeds and atoms and .NET and interactivity and located media. And yet, I think view control is one of the things that changed our world. It changed how we interact with information, and yet nobody heard about it, right? Doesn't sound as sexy as interactivity, but equally it is as important, right? As Engelbart points out, this new writing medium, which we were creating, could switch at user wish between many different views of the same information, right? So in your case of your file system, you can look at your files as icons or as a list or as a list with properties. In the case of an image, right, you know, for example, you have Photoshop image, you can turn on and off layers, you can zoom in and out, you can look at the vectors and so on, right? So this view control is now implemented throughout all the computer applications, right? But Engelbart was just talking about text. So he says that a text file could be sorted in different ways. It could also be organized as hierarchy with a number of levels which can be collapsed and expanded like an outline processor such as Microsoft Word. Right? So again, it looks like, well, you know, we're just kind of simulating paper, we're just simulating a book, you know, putting it on the computer very carefully. We're just going to add something. Gee, the computer allows us to change different views of a document. Well, once you add this new property, you actually end up with some fundamentally new medium, which is, and this property, of course, is now can be found throughout. In fact, one of the reasons you probably never thought about it is that it became so natural today after 25 years of graphical user interface. It's not an experience as such, you know, as something special, and yet it is as special as interactivity. It is as special as the network, right? So since new media theory and criticism emerged in the early 1990s, endless texts have been written about interactivity, intermediality, hypermediality, multimedia, hypertext, virtual space, cyberspace, cyborgs, and so on. Yet I have never seen anybody discuss view control. And yet this is one of the most fundamental and radical new techniques for working with information media available to us today. Okay. Now, so this is kind of part one of my argument, right? The idea of that these people simulated, you know, systematically existing physical media in the computer, but while we kind of translated their properties into software, we have also added fundamental new properties, which in fact change this media into new media, right? So Sutherland, Nelson, Engelbart, Kay, you know, Negroponte, and people who worked with them and other pioneers of computational media have added many previously non-existent properties to media we have simulated in the computer. The subsequent generations of computer scientists, hackers, designers have added many new properties, but this process is far from being finished. So now we come to the second part of my argument, which is the fundamentally open-ended nature of computer media. And I think there is no logical or material reason why this process will never be finished. So we'll never have a stable media. I don't think we'll ever, you know, even despite all the commercial global interest, I don't think the computer media is ever going to converge towards some kind of stable condition, stable material form, or stable language, the way it happened with print, you know, film, and our sort of pre-industrial, industrial media. So why? To add new properties to physical media requires modifying its physical substance. And in the case of, you know, industrial media, where you have whole industrial apparatus like film projectors and films, you know, editing tables, you know, it's a kind of costly proposition. You have to rewire a whole industry. But since computational media exists largely as software, we can add new properties or even invent new types of media simply by changing existing or writing new software. And this is exactly what we've been seeing in the last, you know, 30 years, and this process has gradually accelerated. For example, we can add new plugins or extensions, as programs have been doing with Photoshop or Firefox, right? So every time you load a new extension to Firefox, you basically change what the Firefox medium is. You can also combine existing software together and existing kind of data interfaces. For example, as of this moment, as you know, programmers keep extending the capacities of mapping media, right? I was showing, you know, the Google Earth earlier, by creating software mashups, which combine the services and data provided by Google Maps, Flickr, Amazon, other sites, in media uploaded by users. In short, I can give you a kind of new definition, a new interpretation, why new media is new. So in fact, it turns out that this term is actually profoundly correct, but maybe not in the way we have understood this before. I would like to suggest that new media is new because new properties, i.e. new software techniques, can always be easily added to it, right? It's never going to be old. It's always going to be expanded, right? Yes, 2 minutes? 2 minutes, okay. Okay. 1 minute, okay. All right, well, since we have 1 minute, we didn't get to actually the most interesting part. Okay, 1 minute is fine, no problem. No problem. Hold on, just looking for my cursor. Okay, here it is. Okay. So how shall we call this new, right, this new medium which was created, right? What is it? Okay. Hold on. Okay. Let me just go here. Okay. Hold on. Just a second. I promise 1 minute, okay? I promise. You know, I never lie, you know how it is. Okay, here it is. Okay? So again, you know, I personally think that you know, if we actually start looking at the work, at the actual articles and talks of, you know, these people of this generation, you'll find that they are best theorists of computer media today, right? Because we're not technicians who simply extend existing technology. In order to invent computational media, we had to question all the existing software and hardware paradigm, right? And also, it was not like now you have your processing, you know, you have your Macs, you have your Java, you can just go and start hacking. You know, we had to think deeply for years before we actually had the opportunity to go and build something. So I think the people in this generation, you know, including Ted, were artists and intellectuals who thought very deeply about existing media, right? Kind of conceptually, right? On a conceptual level, on paper, defined what this new media can be and then went around and actually built them, right? So the history of computer media is not technological determinism, rather it's exact opposite. Right, every single property which you have today, which you enjoy, you know, without thinking about, saving a file, changing views, adding layers, you know, linking, you know, it's a result of years and years of work of very smart people and big and very collaborators. So what I want to do is to basically kind of just point your attention to the last page in this article, which I was referring to, by Alan Kay and Adele Goldberg, where I find, for my money, as we say in America, right, from my point of view, I think the best definition of what computer media really is, right? So basically, here's what Kay and Goldberg says, right? So we call computer, you know, a meta medium whose content would be a wide range of already existing and not invented media, right? So we're not really dealing with, you know, different media anymore, you know, film, motion graphics, you know, web, we're basically dealing with metamedia, which has the most amazing property in the history of human culture, right? It both simulates most existing physical media, and it's also a whole kind of generative engine. It's a system which allows people, you know, who know about programming and who also know about the history of media so we can innovate, invent endless new media types or media species, right? And what I want to say, and I'm really finishing now, is that, well, I think, you know, when you know, this generation and Kay and ours were thinking about it, of course, the computer was very much removed from popular culture and programming was hard and the artists who were working in the 60s and 70s, you know, had to kind of beg to get access to computers. Since when things changed, of course, when Apple released, you know, first Macintosh, we didn't put programming environment in it, so it was actually very hard to program when we put HyperCard. But then things got slowly better, right? More and more people started to learn computer programming. There are now hundreds of digital art departments, for example, in China alone. There are very high-level languages such as processing and others, you know, Python, Perl, scripting. And I think if you look at the kind of new media landscape today, every day you hear about new add-on, new mashup, new open source, you know, environment to do this, new open source to do that, yet new software, et cetera, I think today there's like a few thousands of mashups. So I think what happened is that this generation, and again, I don't want to blame Ted here, so let's blame let's blame Alan, we kind of unleashed a Trojan horse, which themselves I think we didn't know about. Right? So when they said, okay, we're going to create this machine, which is a metamedia, which has all this existing media, so you can make drawings and paintings, but which will also very easily allow people to create new media 30 years ago, where vision got realized in a very monstrous way, where today a very large part of human cultural energy is no longer goes towards creating content using existing stable media, but rather constantly creating and modifying all these thousands of different media, which or media species, which can be done within a computer. So in a kind of paradoxical way, today we moved from being artists to being kind of meta-artists, where the invention of new media, which happens really daily, and if you go around Artitronica, you'll find dozens of new media, right? You take Google Earth, you add some video, you add 3D, you have new media. You add like another plugin, you get another new media, right? Because if we define media as something which is different from our media because it offers unique, distinctive capabilities for representation network, you know, every time you do mashup, it's like a new media. So what happens instead of creating content, instead of kind of homos content, so to say, we became kind of homos tool builders. And sometimes I wonder why. Are we simply preparing these tools for next generation, perhaps for aliens? And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to kind of criticize it. I don't want to say it's a bad situation, but we have to recognize that in fact what we're doing, we are children of people who created this Trojan horse. And at least if we understand what, you know, the situation, we perhaps we'll be able to do it better. You know, either we'll be able to create smarter media or not create them at all and maybe do some little bit of content. Thank you so much. Sorry I took a little bit more time.
Okay, thanks. I think we can combine the discussion on Mark's contribution and Lev's in the end, for we are very, really short of time a little bit, and maybe you prepare already while I introduce you. Yeah. And sorry, yeah. ich mache eine Überleitung, wie man so schön sagt. Yeah, irgendwie, yeah.
All right, let's now come to the next speaker.
Just to make the link from what Lev presented and what Mark Rees presents, and Mark Rees insisted in that those papers will be pretty different, and I'm sure about that, because as far as I've been talking with my two colleagues, they could, for example, have a very different view on this question of the newness. Whereas Lev, what you have been presenting to us is new from the side of the physical experience that we can make, because media in a certain way, as far as they produce effects of sound, vision, text, and stuff like that, are anthropomorphic, and the human senses will not change even if we enhance the media environment. It's just new combinations of the senses and channels that we have, which are basically eyes, ears, touch, smell, and stuff like that.